Japanese Labor Prison is the name of this podcast, this project, I would rather call it, really, in order to just record my personal account of being sent to Japanese Labor Prison. However, this project will go a little further than that, and it'll go into my history and why I was there. And then I suppose my relationship with Japan will be the main beginning of the story, because it starts off when I was 2 years old. We won't get into the Japanese labor prison for a while, but there's going to be build up as to why I've been going to Japan all my life and how we got there. And I appreciate you guys listening, tuning in, and giving me feedback. I did a podcast before. This is a personal project. I won't plug the other one, but, you know, this is a story that I want to put out there. So this will be a little personal project. I don't know how fast I'll finish it. I'm going to try to finish it kind of fast. I don't know how to publish anything. So coming back to Anchor, I'm going to build it on here. And I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a pretty crazy story. I'm no longer allowed in Japan because of this story. So just stick with me, bear with me through the history of it as to why I was in Japan, how I got there. Basically, my father's military ended up there. I've been going there all my life. He still lives there to this day. His relationship with Japan is fine. He's key part of this story. And then I'm gonna go into this history of everything, where I was going back and forth, why I got to Japan, how long I've been going to Japan. I've loved Japan. Japan is a great place. It's a shame that I'm not allowed there anymore. All right, enjoy the show. So welcome back. This will be the second edition to the story, building up to the real story, essentially, but I'm just kind of feel like you got to build it all up as to why I was in Japan. And the first installation of this podcast project, I went over about basically where I was born, why I ended up in Japan at the age of two. I came back to America at the age of almost eight. And then my mom found me in Pittsburgh, and there was a whole situation there where I hadn't seen her in 6 years. We ran into each other in basically at the Amtrak, right at the station. I saw her for the first time in so long. I knew exactly who she was. I didn't hesitate to run to her. I knew that was my mama. But living in Japan was definitely an experience, and my mother let that happen. She let me go live with my dad. They were divorced. And I went and lived with my dad in Japan from 2 to 7. And basically, I don't know, I came back fluent in Japanese, but I was taken out of America, put in a foreign land. I adjusted, adapted, and became almost a little Japanese kid over there because all my friends lived off base. I had friends on base, but the majority of my friends in life were spent off base. So, you know, that mattered, and I had to adjust to that life. And then I came back to America. I was in Pittsburgh, and I had a friend up there. I knew him for a long time. I bet you if I tried on social media, I could find him, but because I know my family kept in touch with him, but who knows? Who knows how that went? But my mom came and took me down to Mississippi. Now, that was a whole nother, like, having to figure it out. I hadn't even figured out Pittsburgh but before I left Pittsburgh. I left there probably after being there 3-4 months, like a semester of second grade, the first semester. Essentially, I didn't have much time to figure that one out. And now I moved down to Mississippi with my mother. And we started off at my aunt's house, because basically, like, all my grandpa had come back into town. It was Christmas. It was a great Christmas. I remember getting like this little baseball toy that I really, really wanted. It broke like the first time. It was like expensive. My grandpa was like, nah, hell no. Nah. And then I also remember that my grandpa was no longer called grandpa, and he's called dadaw, because my cousin Jessica had just heard her dad calling her grandpa dad, and then they're trying to teach her grandpa, and she's ended up calling him dad all, and it was the cutest name ever. So they went with it, and nobody's mad about that. I was a little bit. Nobody else cared. I wasn't even in the goddamn conversation. I come back, I'm calling him grandpa, and now I got this angry 4-year-old telling me, "That's dad all." I'm like, "Oh, okay. He's dad all then. I don't really care, I guess." But it was that was one small change. But the real change came whenever we got our own place. Me and my mom, we were in this trailer park. This trailer park had 300 trailers. It was a stone's throw away from the swamps. Whenever it rained real good, the woods next to us would flood so much that we could like take tires from the bus barn that was close, and we could like float because they're big bus tires. And we're kids, you just get one tire yourself and just use a big stick and just go through the swampy marsh with it. Catch yourself a snake. You weren't going to catch a alligator in those woods. It was over on the other side of the trailer park where the bayou was. There's a park right there too. So like we would go to this park. No alligators would come to the park, but that stone's throw thing, it's pretty close. They eventually like built a pier back there, like you could just go walk through the marshes and stuff. But before that, before there was ever thought of a pier, me and those kids, I moved there when I was 8, and those kids already figured out how to get to this island and stuff. We built like a little fort on the island. We were kids. We were having a blast in the woods. Like parents, they'd freak out if they saw their kids. Like if I saw my kid kicking it over there, I'd be like, "Oh my God, get the fuck out of there. Are you insane right now? Get out of there." Me and my friends though, we were knifed up. I had a pellet gun. I didn't even have a BB gun. I had a pellet gun. My grandpa gave me a good gun and a machete. You need to have a machete. You're gonna run into like raccoons that are like kind of as big as you and could probably like beat you up because you're a child. They probably fuck you up. A raccoon, a big ass grown ass raccoon can fuck somebody up. Fuck a child up, that's for sure. They could really wreak havoc on you. But that was kind of my introduction to the swamp of Mississippi. This is coming back to America for me in my head. Because all that other stuff leading through Pittsburgh and meeting my family up there, that was great spending time with them. I still know them. You know, like I mean, naturally we're Facebook friends, but like I have a real relationship with quite a few of them because I would go to Pittsburgh a lot. After I was like 12, I would start going up to Pittsburgh every summer, and I'd go hang out with, my family, my cousins, Trisha and Aunt Phil, Aunt Mary, Uncle Dave, Aunt Lori, all kinds of people. Uncle Joe, the Perrys, the Tassonis, the family reunions up there were gnarly. But we're not here to talk about Pittsburgh, I don't believe. I think kind of just, I want to touch on Mississippi in this memoir, so to say, I guess. But essentially, my mom gets me, takes me down to Mississippi. We go live in this trailer park for years. Years and years. And like the first month I'm there, like this redheaded boy was giving me grief, just nonstop grief. Ernest Donald Smith. It started off, and by grief I mean like he'd punch me in the face. Like let's keep it real. Ernie would hit you. And it started off at like the weirdest thing to think back now, because I don't even see kids even considering this right here. But there was just a pile of dirt, and that's where we would go play with our cars. And then once I had found out that that was fun, and we were digging holes there and stuff. I had a friend named Paul. He had a shovel. It was the coolest little shovel because it could dig out little caves for your cars, and they just look cool. I don't know what we were thinking. We were children. We're gonna go through tunnels and things. We're idiots. Ernie, we show up the next day, and Paul left his shovel there like an idiot. You got to take care of your tools, Paul. Paul, you need to take care of your tools. He left his tools there. Shows up, Ernie, he's sitting there playing with it. He's playing with cars with a shovel that aren't his. Paul takes great offense to this, and he gets all mad and starts thinking he's gonna have it out with old Ernie. And Ernie wasn't having none of that. He told, well, basically it was verbal at first, and Paul was scared anyway. But basically Ernie's like, I found these things here, and I'm just playing with them, man. Why are you yelling at me? I could respect that, but Paul's my friend, so I got to help Paul out here. I'm like, hey, man, give the man his stuff back. He's like, who are you? I'm new there. I don't know you. And like me and him had a verbal argument that day. And it wasn't long before him and this other kid, they came to my house, but I didn't see Ernie. Ernie was hiding behind an oak tree with a 2x4. This other kid comes up, knocks on my door. I'm new there. He's like, hey, you're new here? You want to go play? And I'm like, yeah, man, let's go to the park or whatever. I think he suggested the park. I was like, yeah, I've never been there or whatever. I walk out, and I'll be damned if Ernie don't pop out from behind that oak tree with a 2x4, hit me in the chest, drop 2x4 and run. I fell back. I was, oh, hell, boom, hit me in the chest with a 2x4, this kid. I give chase, but they're long gone. Like, I picked up the 2x4. I got the weapon now. I didn't immediately think to do the same thing to him. But after like a week or two of me and him having fist fights at the park and then just in the street, he lived across the street from me. And he usually got the better of me, to be honest. But we were both black-eyed and just beat up. And like, he got the better of me one time. And I was fucking over. I was, I'm going to hit this motherfucker with that 2x4. I'm going to hit him with the 2x4. So I picked up the 2x4. I made this decision. I had a black eye. I was looking at my mom, and she was telling me I need to stop fighting because it's dangerous. I was like, no, I'm going to hit this dude with this 2x4 in my head. I didn't have 2x4 in my hand at that time. But I went outside, grabbed it out the shed, and I went over, and I waited for Ernie to come out of his house. It was like time for school. You know, I knew he was going to come out, and I was going to hit him. I was going to hit him. I don't know where. I didn't know what or why, but I was going to hit him with his 2x4. He done hit me with a 2x4. He done beat me up. I'm going to hit him with a 2x4. I'm going to do it. This is what's going through my head. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, hey! Miss Tassie, his mama, this redheaded lady staring at me out of this trailer window. The hell are you doing out there? Are you going to hit my boy? I was like, yeah. He hit me with this 2x4, and I'm going to hit him with it. And she said, the hell you are? You ain't going, but you, he hit you with that? I was like, he did. I'm going to hit him with it. And she said, no, you're not. And then she went and grabbed that boy by the ear and drug him outside. She asked him, did you hit that boy with that 2x4? He's like, yeah, I did. Why? Why? And he started trying to explain the dirt pile and tools. That made zero sense to her. She's like, over toys that weren't yours? And they came and said they were theirs and you fought over it. And she was all upset. She grabbed him by the ear and she said, let's go to your house. And we went over to my house and my mom was like out. And she looked out of her trailer window like, what? Trailer people will look out their bedroom window and expect you to just think that that's okay. But, yeah, like Tassie, Miss Tassie, she was like, we can't have this. These boys just need to be friends. And well, I'm going to make them be friends. And my mom was like, oh, well, okay, that sounds like a good idea to me. And me and Ernie from that day, we kicked it. Like, we were like, all right, if we're going to be friends, we're okay. And we ran that trailer park. Well, I mean, in our age group, I suppose. But, like, we did whatever we wanted. We had the hookup. I don't know. Eventually, I had a job working for my grandpa because on my 10th birthday, he shows up, free rides over. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? You got a job. And he gave me a job at the age of 10 years old to go help be his assistant at plumbing. And I did that. I mean, I did that every summer, every weekend, every spring break. I was available when I wasn't going to Japan for like a 2-week stint or something like that. But either way, like I was kind of, when I came back, I better expect to work, but I always had money. And when I was 10, I had money and I would come back home with like, hell, it was 250, So I make like he worked me 10 hours. He gave me 250. It's like $25 a day, but he takes $5 out for lunch. So I get $20 per day. I come back to the trailer park with $40 as a 10-year-old. And after about 3 months of that, I had money. Like I had already bought a TV for $10. I had to slap upside the side so it would work. Like it worked, but you had to slap it. You had to slap it. I don't know if you ever had a TV you had to slap, but that thing had to be slapped. That's the only way to jiggle it right. I mean, maybe I could have fixed it. Maybe somebody else could have fixed it, but slapping it made it work, and I could watch Saved by the Bell or whatever the hell it ended up being after a while. But what I do remember is having money, more money than I needed. And then I'd be at the store, and people like my friends would see me buying myself, like, you know, candy bar, soda. Guess what? They want one. Hey, man, you got money. I was like, oh, you want one? I'll buy you one, but you're gonna owe me one. And they didn't really like that, but still, they owed me one. And then typically they'd have to steal it because they never had any money. If I like felt like they needed to pay that day, I'd be like, you gotta go steal me a Coke, man. But I also had like a I had a poker night every Tuesday. I had a poker night. It was like five card. We didn't know Texas Hold'em or nothing like that. And then my mom borrowed money from me one time, and this changed my little kid mind for a long time. Like it changed my view on loaning money out, because I didn't know anything about interest. I buy you one, you owe me one. Like I bought you a Coke, you owe me a Coke. I'm gonna hold that on your head until you buy me a Coke. Like you asked me to buy it, and you promised to give me a Coke. If I bought it for you without making that agreement, then yeah. But if I bought it, you owe me one. My mom, she wanted to borrow $50. I was like, okay, I can let you borrow $50. She's like, what percentage do you want? I said, I want 100%. And she looked at me like I was all kinds of messed up. But she was like, okay, I really need this money. And about 3 weeks later, whatever time it took for her to get the money from whatever she needed to get it from, however she got it. But basically, she gives me $100. And I'm like, what? What are you giving me $100 for? She's like, interest. You asked for 100% interest. I was like, I just wanted 100% of my money back. Like I just wanted all my money back. I was looking at my mom like confused. She's like, all right, you don't get it. And she explained interest rates to me. And she's like, typically like 10% is kind of a reasonable number for if someone's borrowing money from you personally or something like that. But like she kind of went into credit cards and all kinds of things that went over my head. You know, little kid mind don't want to hear it more than anything. But I didn't want to hear it. But basically, anybody that borrowed or asked had me buy a candy bar for them, they owed me two after that. I thought that was how loans work after that. I didn't know there was a 10%. And all I heard was that I could loan somebody $1 and get $2 is what my little kid fucking mind heard. And I basically, as soon as I heard that, I was taking people to movies. I was like, oh yeah, you owe me, you owe me. I was a little loan shark, man. And then I got robbed one time. This kid, he robbed me for like $121. I found him. He had spent some of it, but he gave it all back. Me and Ernie beat him up. And then that same kid was a little thief. That kid was a little thief, man. I think I probably had him stealing things for me. He figured I could just steal things and he was just a little thief after that. But he stole $100 from his aunt. We're like 10, 11 years old. He stole a whole $100 and he shows up at the park with a $100 bill. And he's like, who wants to go to the store? And he tried to do some shit like that with me, but like what I did, I'll buy you one, but you owe me two. I was like, I got money in my pocket, man. What you telling me? But I was also an extortionist. That's the Italian in me. I told him, hey, if you don't give me some of that money, I'm going to tell your aunt you stole it. He's, man, that's fucked up. I was, you better give me $5, man. He's, all right, man, here's $5. So I came up $5 off this little kid's thievery. I thought I was a cunning little asshole. Needless to say, that blew all the way up. Everything blew up. At his house is a trailer. Let's not get crazy. His trailer, His aunt figured it out. Like, he stole the money. He was a little thief, and they probably knew it. And then he tried to say he went to the store, and then it didn't quite work out. And he's like, "Oh yeah, and I give $5 to Frankie." Little bastard snitched me out, not only to his aunt, but she had called the cops. Cops were already there anyway, because it was $100, and in what, 1991, $100 is still a lot of money. And anybody living in a trailer park, that's rent. Like, that's rent. So that's a lot to them. And shit, $100 is still a lot to me right now. They'll give me 10 good lunches and like 20 decent lunches. You know, that's a lot of money. It could be stretched out. But he told the police he gave me $5. I'm sleeping. And the police come knocking on my door. My mom answers. She comes to my room, wakes me up, says, "Hey, police are here." She's not happy. Mom is a saint. She's a really nice lady. Puts up with a lot of people's shit. But today, she was not being a nice lady. She's yelling and screaming at me. She says, "Why the hell are the police here? What did you do?" Rightfully so, I imagine. Because all they had said to her was, "We just want to speak to your son." And she came to my room flipping out. Like, "What did you do? The police are here," pretty much. So I'm freaking out. Like, what the hell are the police doing here? I didn't remember nothing. I was asleep. And I was a kid, so I was in kid sleep, deep sleep. This guy starts talking about money. And I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that kid stole that money." And he's like, "Did a kid give you money?" I was like, "Yeah." I don't remember his name now. Someone called him Kid. But could have been Chad. Could have very well been Chad. But as the cops asked me, I was like, "Oh, yeah." He's trying to give me all this grief about taking stolen money and this and that. And I walk over to basically my hiding spot for my poker money, which is also just my little safe. All it is a big tin, just full of change. Oh, so much change. So much change. And then I had a big wad of cash, probably about $300 as a little 11-year-old. And I go over there and I'd put the money in there. I really liked spending my money. I had a notebook. I was always trying to save money. I was a writer. Like, I would write down how much money I had and how can I get more, who owed me, things like that. I was bookkeeping when I was 11. I'm like, I need to know who owes me money. But I pulled out the wad of cash and I gave it to the cop. He looked at me like, "Why do you have so much money?" I was like, "I have a job." He's like, "You do not have a job. Why do you have so much money?" I looked at my mom. She's like, "He has a job." And he's confused out of his mind right now. Because I pulled the whole jar over and I pulled the money out and 10. It was, yeah, 10. But that guy was tripping. He's like, "You saved all this money?" I was like, "Yeah, I saved money. I have a poker night." And I explained all the same stuff I'm talking about right now to him. He's like, "What the hell? Give me the $5. Stop taking stolen goods. You could go to jail." And he's looking at my mom kind of confused. He really has a job. And she's like, "Yeah, he works for my dad. He's a plumbing assistant. Like, you could sit out here and wait on the weekend, 6:30 in the morning. He'll be getting picked up and going to work." But I would work 10-hour days. So, but $40 as a 10-year-old every weekend was a lot of money. Like, I couldn't spend that much. I was taking people to movies and stuff. Like, it was dollar theater, but I'd buy them stuff. They typically never paid me back. They had to steal things to make it up. Like, eventually, like Little John, once we got older and started smoking cigarettes, like, anytime he built up a debt, I'd let him build up to $80. I'd let him build up to $80, no problem. Cigarette packs were like $2 back then. $2. I knew I'd get like 40 packs of cigarettes. And he taught me how to steal cigarettes. They were always like there was a back then there was a straight a display on the counter of cigarettes. Like, please grab 2 packs of cigarettes and hand them to the counter instead of having them hidden. But what he would do, he'd grab 2 packs, put them in his pocket, look the guy eye to eye, and the guy would be like, "Hey, give me that pack back." He'd give him the pack back, boom. He gave him 1 pack back. He's got 1 pack in his pocket. And either way, we got cigarettes for the day. And if he got away with two, he'd pay me back one. It'd go towards his debt. He'd have a pack. I'd have a pack. We wouldn't have to bum off a pack. But sometimes he got caught. And you just run at that point. Eventually, this guy, Eddie Ford, come along. And I guess that's kind of, we're skipping a little bit. We're skipping way down in 15. But I'm supposed to be talking about going back to Japan. By 10, I think at 11, I go back to Japan when I'm 11. I had to wait for a passport, essentially, before I could fly alone. You got to be 10 years old. And I got the passport. And so we decided next summer I'd go to Japan. And that was going to be the summer that I was 11, but August is basically my birthday. So I would always go to Japan in the summer for my birthday see my dad. But that ended up being just kind of the thing I did all the time. I would always go to Japan for the summer. And typically for my birthday, and we go to Disneyland, all kinds of things over there. I touched on Disneyland, how much better it is in Japan than it is here. But all kinds of stuff is better. KFC is better. McDonald's is better. Makudo Naruto. I think last episode I went into all kinds of Japanese terms and stuff like that. But my first trip back to Japan was when I was 11. My dad had married a new woman, Yoko. He's no longer with Notico. And so that was a change. Although I was just there for, you know, a couple weeks. They're still in an apartment. They didn't get their house yet at that point. But I went back after a while. But, you know, I'd go back all the time. But whenever I went back to America again and to the trailer park, like I got picked up in New Orleans and it was an hour drive, got home. And it was my birthday. I was going to have a birthday party. Because I guess I was flying back on my birthday. And the cool thing about flying to Japan is whenever you fly back, you kind of fly back in time. Like you land a few hours before you left. So I saw my dad on my birthday. I said bye to him and I flew back home on my birthday. And it was like the same time I left my dad. And, you know, I slept on the plane. That's a long trip. You end up going through Atlanta. It's a long trip. But I would do that by myself. And this time I did it by myself when I was 11 and 12 now. It was my 12th birthday. And I remember walking in to the trailer. I opened the door and there's like fucking like 10 moons right at me. All these kids are mooning me. And then their smart asses put Eric Sykes in the middle. He's like our only black friend. So it's just a fucking, let's see a fucking white asses and this one dark black ass right in the middle. I still know Eric to this day. Oh, no offense in any way, shape, or form. He was our buddy. Trielle, his sister, has always been a friend. We're still Facebook buddies. She likes some of my posts. But yeah, eventually we got out of that trailer park, but that was a good day. We had a good day that day. I was kind of mean to this one kid named Eric. It was a different Eric. But he had six toes, and he had to go. I wasn't thrilled that he was there. I was mad at my mom, but mostly he just had to go before it was a spend the night party. My mom was mad at me. I was like, hey, like, you know what? The party's one thing, but he don't need to be in my spend the night party. Like, he's going to be taking some of my pizza. I want to eat the whole pizza. When I was a kid, I didn't want to share no damn pizza. Make my mom give me a whole pizza. I'm going to eat that whole thing. So yeah, we moved out of the trailer park, did a little stint William Carey while my mom was going to college there, lived in my grandma's for a minute, and then eventually the apartment hunt happened because we got out of the trailer park. We were over being in the trailer park after we lived on campus at William Carey College. We didn't want to be in a trailer park anymore. In fact, my mom did look at trailers, but there were so many crackheads there, and I was like, Mom, please don't move me in here. Like, there's only one street. Like, there's one street. This is a one-street trailer park. At least the trailer park I was at before, it was a huge maze, and there's different people. Like, this just looked like all, like, they're all part of the crackhead crew. Like, they're all hanging out in the same spot. But we ended up in a Bioview Apartments, and it looked great. Like, I was like, oh, my God, this big, huge apartments. Like, I got a pool, and we're right next to the pool. That's amazing. It looked like a great thing. And then as soon as we start moving in, like, we just rolled through and kind of looked at it at first. I was like, oh, yeah, I'd be happy to live here. She applied. We got it. And then I'll be damned. I mean, I'm sure we got Section 8 housing too. So is anything that was supposed to be Section 8? This place was the hood. I didn't even have any fucking clue how hood, but my buddy, or actually, he wasn't my buddy at the time. I just remember fighting him, or not fighting him, but like we were always like kind of snickering at each other in school. Like we never did fight, me and Eric. But we yelled at each other over like some PE or something like that, sports wise. We didn't like each other necessarily. He's also August, 1981 August. He was August too. He was August 13th. But anyway, or ninth. He could have been before me. Yeah, I think that was his thing too. He's a little older than me. He's the 8th or the 9th. But he comes walking up to me when me and my uncle are moving like furniture in. He's like, "What the fuck you doing here?" And big old black kid. And I'm like, "We're moving in." He's like, "Oh my God, you're moving in here, right here?" Looking at the apartment, I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Man, I live right there." And it was like one step over, like one, because it was like there's stoops and everything. Like it was a fucking brick project, kind of. Like, honestly, it looked kind of fancy because of the bushes. That's the only reason I can say it looked kind of fancy. Had a pool in my memory. So this is nice enough. It's got a pool. Fuck. But he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "You just moved in the hood, man. Like, you're going to be good." I was like, "Well, I guess so." He's like, "Man, you'll be all right. Like, you're good. You're good with me." So me and him were friends right after that. And then Doggy, I already remember Doggy that I knew. And we had our own little, kind of not necessarily crew, but I had a couple friends there immediately. And then I met Little John, but it wasn't long before I was, there kicking it, end up like a couple stoops over. And I think I was doing laundry in the laundromat, and that's where it was. And like they had this group of guys smoking a blunt. And I walked up and I knew Doggy and I knew I didn't know Eric wasn't there, but it was Doggy and like all his friends and then also these 36th Street. I don't know if there's it's like 32nd Street. It's 32nd Street. And they after a while I knew these guys. I know them all, Jeremy and his brother Jamar Benz and all kinds of people. Jamar Benz commented on my little commercial today. Like I've known these guys. I'm still pretty much good with these guys. Some guys are indifferent. But me and this one guy, Fat Chris, we still ain't cool. Fat Chris, I'm 14 years old. I come kicking at the stoop. I smoke a blunt. And then Fat Chris, he's 18. He decides he's going to punch me. I'm like, "Hey, I got to go finish my laundry. My mom's going to be wondering what I'm doing later. Mom don't know I'm smoking weed and stuff. So I got to get home. You know what I mean? I need to finish my chores and get home." And as I'm doing dabs, everybody, you're usually doing right hand, right hand, right hand. All of a sudden, this one dude, he's up on a stoop. I'm on the ground. He puts out his left hand. I'm like, "Oh, okay." I already had my right hand out. He just grabbed my arm and pulls me in. And then boom, from upper deck, sticks me in the face. Bam. I'm on the ground. I'm like, "Oh shit, I need to get the fuck up." I get up. And I slam, like, I get up, he's coming at me, I slam into his chest, and I just push him, like, in football, I push him up against the brick wall, boom, slam him up against it, and I run. I thought I was about to get jumped. There's, like, six black dudes around me. I was like, in fact, Chris was white. He's, like, the only white guy. Maybe that was, like, he wanted to be the only white guy or something. I don't know, but he hit me, it hurt, and I needed to get the fuck out of there. I ran my happy ass home, and then, my buddies knocked on the door. I remember like opening the door all crazy, what? Like ready to fucking fight. I thought it was them, but it was my buddies. And they're like, "Man, you should have just started swinging on him. Like, we thought you were going to win. Like, you should have started swinging on him." And I was like, "Man, what the fuck was that, bro?" He's like, "Man, I don't know why I did that." But I told my friends from my old neighborhood about this because, I wasn't totally sure if I was safe in this neighborhood anymore. And, my buddy's like, "Oh, that's some bullshit. Come hang out with us over here on this side." I had my mom drop me off at the old neighborhood, and we went like to get to the mall. It's about a 2 mile hike, like on the street. It's not too far, but we get there after a while. For kids, it was a hike for us. It was a trek. We had an adventure to get to the mall. Then you get to the mall, you're kicking it. And I'm with Eddie Ford and Vincent Cottrell. And we're just walking along. And I'm like, "Hey, that's that dude that fucking jumped me, man." And like, they're like, "That's the guy." And they ran over there, and like they were all like pushing and shoving, and then he ran across the street. And he was like on, he had a cell phone back then, a big old brick phone, and he was calling his boys and stuff. But turns out his dad was the police and stuff, and he I don't know, he probably has a dad's phone or something like that. He wasn't calling nobody neither. He probably didn't have no kind of service, but he's like acting like he's calling his boys and stuff. And we didn't jump him, like he got away. But Eddie Ford came to my neighborhood, and we were gonna go. This is probably a few weeks later, but we'd met some girls at Boppers, and Boppers was the roller skating rink down there. I see all these new TikTok videos and Instagram videos of people in roller skating rinks. I'm really happy they're doing that, but we've been doing that. It's awesome that it's back. And we used to have the best time when we were like 12, 13, 14 at those places. And eventually you get old enough, you don't go to that anymore. Too young. But you can always go have fun, I guess. But we didn't go anymore. We were smoking weed and doing stupid shit. But I don't know. We were going to go see this girl, Aaron. Aaron was down the street from my apartment. He come over to my area. And we were gonna ride my Schwinn down there. I had this 1960s blue Schwinn. It was nice. It was really tight. And we were riding. I was riding the handlebars. He was like, "Let me ride the thing." I was like, "All right, whatever." I hopped on the handlebars, and we're scooting along down this one street, and you gotta go past 32nd Street. And lo and behold, there's this 32nd Street gang. I don't have to name off any names, but they all know who they are. But I ended up getting hit by Khadijah, mate. That boy was all muscle. He hit me. I came to biting his ankle like a dog. Like I got tribal. He hit me so damn hard, I don't remember it. But we got jumped. But what I do remember before I got hit, Eddie, like I hopped off the handlebars and act like I was gonna square up to somebody, and I got hit before I could even realize what was happening. And then Eddie hit Fat Chris right in the face with the front tire of the blue Schwinn, and then he started licking him up, and then Jamar Benn started beating him up. Jamar beat up Eddie, and then we just got beat up pretty much, and then we escaped without the bike. like we wasn't, they didn't chase us down the street, but like we just kind of backed away. We were cussing at each other. And there's some people yelling, "Hey, stop that!" and fucking shit. And they took my bike, and that sucked. But we both got beat up pretty much. Wasn't much we were gonna do. There were about six of them. Two. We're 14. They're probably 17, 18, really. But we went and saw that girl. She saw us beat up, and like she's like, "Yeah, I can't even come out the house." So yeah, later. So that was a horrible trip. Not worth it. She acted like she was nice through the window, but that's as far as we were allowed into her fancy house. We were ruffian kids, and then we showed up. Like, Eddie's nose is fucked up, too. Eddie's nose is bent. Yeah, I don't think it was broke, but it had been broke before, and his nose is weird. He got beat up a lot, but he was also down to squab. He didn't get beat up a lot. He typically won his fights, actually. Like, he wanted a one-on-one. But Mississippi's wild, so it's typically not one-on-one. So you're getting jumped. You're having a big brawl. Mississippi was gnarly. But after I got home, like, Khadijah Mace showed up to my house, and he let me punch him in the face. He's like, "I didn't know you were 14. We're going to work on that punch." And then I'm really happy me and him bonded, essentially, because in those apartments, it was kind of crazy. Like, there's a lot of gang stuff happening. We're really close to a different hood that really was the hood, and that's where some people go sell crack and things like that, and then they come back. And they typically got to do, like, a 4 a.m. shift and stuff like that. I never did it. I funded it. Like, I'd give them the money for a double up, and then we'd, after they doubled it up a couple times, we'd have weed, and then we'd go sell the $2 joints at school. And we're always hustling, man. We're always trying to make money. But I also was hanging out with the wrong crowd. And prior to moving into this hood, I was in the trailer park hood. And I learned trailer park things. I learned all kinds of crazy things. I was living on the bayou. You could learn how to make a fire with water. If you don't believe me, we could do a whole podcast about that. We said, well, we could do a 15-second video. It may be a minute video. It wouldn't take a whole podcast, that's for sure. But if you pulled on some people that could do that, like normally, like that would surprise you with it, you'd be entertained for hours upon what they have to say. That's a fact. The bayou people are fucking crazy. But also, while I was in that trailer park, this dude that used to steal cars, he taught me how to steal cars, but it wasn't like it was anything special. It was breaking the steering column, like getting a screwdriver, jamming it in there good, maybe hitting it with that hammer to get in there, and you just turn it. Like, really, all you gotta do is break the steering column, stick it in there right, and you're in. It's you're breaking off the key. And that's how he would do it. Now, I got taught that at 11 years old. I watched him steal nothing but IROC Z's. He would steal IROC Z's and nothing but. He was from Florida. Like, he would tell me, like, Tampa Bay, bro. Me and my friends, we'd, like, just go steal cars and fill up a whole block. Just leave them there. Why? It's fun. Like, y'all got different ideas of fun where you're from. For me, I just want to go out here and do swamp people things. But that dude taught me how to steal cars. And now I'm in this hood. I'm in Bayou Trailer Park. I was in Bayou Oaks Trailer Park. Now I'm in Bayou Apartments. That's what it is. Now I'm in Bayou Apartments. Eric, he's like picking my brain. He's a vice lord. There's vice lords and gangster disciples down there. And then I'm sure there's other gangs that I don't really know, but I'm not a gang expert. That's not what I'm trying to prove here. They were there. But my friends, Doggy and Eric, they're vice lords. There was this one dude, Eric, like bringing around as his cousin or something. I don't remember his name, but I remember he would call him Muscles because he had muscles in his face. Like his like every time he talked, there's like extra muscles moving in his face, so he called him Muscles. And then sometimes he got called Butts because that fool smoked cigarettes down to the butt, like all the way down to the butt. So you call him Butts. Eric, they called him Tortoise. I mean, there's nicknames in there. There's Alley Cat. There's hell, I can't remember everybody's nickname right now. But anyway, everybody had a nickname. Mine sometimes is Lucky because of my shot, my 3-pointer, but it wasn't pretty. My jump shot was ugly, but that thing would go in. That was the whole point. I just sling it over these tall motherfuckers, boom, and it sink. That's all I know. If it went in, it counted. That's all I needed to know. But Tortoise, Doggy, like everybody had nicknames and stuff. This is kind of how it went. And we got jumped in, I don't know, life happened, and it wasn't exactly easy being down in the Mississippis, bro. But it's been 40 minutes. I think I did enough for this episode. I hope it was entertaining, but I definitely, my main goal is to be able to write a book about this and so to touch on these subjects and have it recorded. And if we could possibly make some funding so that I could, afford to publish a book or hire editors, that would be great. Like, that would be kind of the goal with all of this, but mostly just getting it lined up. Now, for the next episode, the third installation, I guess I'll say that again since I said it. Basically, that'll be my first day of high school. My first day of high school is a lead off from teaching Eric how to steal cars. My first day of high school is actually my 15th birthday. I had also gone to Japan. I'd just come back again, but I came back probably a week before my birthday. I wanted to be back home, but I went to Japan. I got all kinds of clothes and stuff, and I was wearing these Skechers that Noriko had got me. And I don't know, the next part of the story, I might ought to call it, like, you can't wear Skechers in the hood. It was said very different, but like I was in this situation in this apartment, and they're asking me if I was down to do some stuff. And I was like, not really. And he looks at my shoes like, man, you can't be wearing Skechers in the hood. And I'll tell you, he didn't say man either. But that's pretty much all I said. I said man all the time. And so much so that my sister thought Doggy's name was man. Virginia thought his name was man. All right, so next episode, first day of high school. It's drama. It's drama like a motherfucker. So kind of sucks that you didn't get to hear the drama this time. I don't think the last episode is necessarily drama, but there's moments, man. You know, little bitty things. This is gonna be a great story. One day people are gonna look back on this story and be like, "Dang, that was a great story. Great, glad you wrote that book." I don't know. Maybe they'll listen to podcasts. I don't think so. The first episode had one play other than me. Yeah, I didn't play it on anything else. So it was legit somebody else. That's all I know. But it was two plays. Not that I'm expecting anything crazy at all. That's all I got written down for today. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully this turns into something. Hopefully we get to write a big old book one day. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Go to whatever they got on here. The listener or creator fund or whatever it's called. Leave me a bunch of money. Like I need like all kinds of thousands. All kinds. Just hook it up. Later.